Format of this meeting is a 10-minute speaker, our secretary's announcements, and a coffee and snack break. Then our main speaker. Our first speaker tonight is John Q.
John, alcoholic. It's good to be here tonight, sober, sane, and fully dressed at this time of the evening. Because if I was drinking, I wouldn't be sane, nor would I might be running out there in the parking lot butt naked. That's the kind of an alcoholic I was. You know, I use a lot of other chemicals too, you know. And how have I been fully restored to sanity? You know, the second step says came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. It doesn't say it would. It says it could. And as a result of working in the big book, it says the 10th step, it says, by this time, sanity would have returned. So as a result of working the steps, I have been fully restored to sanity. You know, the big book says that we share in a general way what we used to be like, what happened in my case. Sometimes I think how little I've changed over the past. I'll be coming up on a birthday, and I'll be 14 years sober the 20th of June. And I'm grateful to God for the time that He's allowed me to stay here. You know, I don't believe in some of the little cliches that are used around here that I used to believe in some years ago. Because I don't give all the honor and the glory to God. God delivered me to the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous June 20th, 1982, but I have to, you know, do some work in order to maintain that relationship with the higher power. Because I'm also a fully recovered Catholic. I went to this church here. I was in that room right over there in the 6th and 7th grade. And I remember that this was before I took a drink. You see, I was a sick man before, I was a sick individual before I took my first drink, you know, and that was at 12 years old. But before I even did that, I remember the nuns lining us up in the parking lot every Friday and taking us up to confession. And I had the same confession every week. I didn't know that the priest knew who you were, you know, because I was going out there saying, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. My last confession was last week, and I used the Lord's name in vain, and I cussed at my mother. And he would tell me, say, 10 Hail Marys, an Our Father, an act of contrition, and sin no more. And I would do that every week. And then again, I had no idea that this priest knew who I was. I thought it was an anonymous thing. And then he said, I went up there one time, and he said, yes, John. And he knew. He knew who it was, and I haven't been back to confession since, you know. But, you know, and I don't know that, you know, I was recently at a funeral up in American Martyrs. A friend of mine's father passed away a couple weeks ago, you know, a freak accident. But anyway, I'm going to talk just a little bit to identify as an alcoholic. I took my first drink when I was 12 years old, and it was a can of Brown Derby beer. I don't think they make that beer anymore. But, you know, and there was no such thing as an invisible line for me. Progressiveness, I went from stone cold sober to annihilated. You know, and I got in a lot of trouble. I went to jail. The only friends I had before I got sober was the police department. They were taking me to jail every time they saw me for 647F, drunk in public, unable to take care of myself, burglary, you know, drunk DUI, drunk driving. And assault with a deadly weapon. I remember standing up in front of Judge Perkovich out there in Torrance for the umpteenth time. This is when the disease was not as recognized. Before, you know, you can turn on the TV and see Alcoholics Anonymous advertised on television. My sober living home was Peter Pitch's Gray Bar Hotel, County Jail. So I'm grateful that, you know, there's so much available to the alcoholic today. But, you know, this judge looked at me one day and he said, what's a good-looking kid like you doing in front of me every week, every couple of days at that time, you know? And I was impressed because he called me a good-looking kid. Then he slammed down his gavel and he would say, 30 days at L.A. County, 60 days at Biscayne Center, 90 days at Wayside or something. I must have did 3.5 years in the installment plan that way, you know? But, you know, I have been through... Now, I'm grateful. You know, every day that I wake up sober instead of coming to, because I was the kind of, if I could, a good day's drinking for me is when I could remember the whole evening, no matter what I did. You know, so I'm grateful today that I wake up and I don't come to. You know, I'm great, and when I just got sober. I got sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was sick and tired of not only the going to jail and stuff, but the feelings that I had in my side, that feeling of loneliness, desperation, and isolation, and I felt, had so much pain going on. See, I use this analogy quite often when I talk. It's like the difference between the normal person and the alcoholic is, see, the normal person put their hand on a hot stove and they take it off. We don't. We keep it on there and we keep ingesting chemicals so we don't have to feel. Okay, that doesn't make us an alcoholic. The feelings or the issues in our lives don't make us an alcoholic. So what happened to me when I got sober is all these feelings started coming up. Issues of the past, resentments, you know, some abuse issues that happened to me as a kid. Again, those do not make us an alcoholic. What makes me an alcoholic is I have a disease. I have a physical allergy with a mental obsession and a spiritual malady. Because there's a lot of people that have been severely abused and have some emotional problems that aren't alcoholic. But all those issues have to be addressed in the alcoholic's life. In my life, I had to address all those issues. You know, and I started working the steps because I didn't want to go back to the pain, the demoralization. You know, I sold my body out there on the street. I can't even give it away today. I have a difficult time giving it away. You know? But, you know, I felt real guilty because I had some homosexual experiences out there. And I spoke at a meeting 7 or 8 years ago at South Bay Hospital and shared that experience. And a couple of the guys came up to me and wanted me to come talk to them and say, I did the same thing. So you never know what you share in a meeting that is so detrimental to you that I was carrying that secret with me my whole life. You know, and I opened up and it helped another individual. So you never know who you're going to be helping by the 6 secrets that you share in a meeting. I don't believe in taking disrobing in front of everybody. I don't take an inventory from the podium. I don't have to dance with everybody, but there is a man in this program who I call my sponsor who knows everything about me. I have the same sponsor I had almost 14 years ago today. I'd never switched. You know, he knows about me. I got into I worked the steps 1 through 12 in order. When I first, you know, and I was around here when I was 19 years old, my probation officer strongly suggested that I had a problem with alcohol. And I went to the Alano Club meeting up here when it was up on Manhattan Beach on Sepulveda there next to a bar. And a funny thing happened, that bar got burned down while the Alano Club was there. But, you know, but I wasn't ready. I had a lot more pain, misery, and stuff to go through. I don't believe you get here 1 minute before you're supposed to. And if you're new, I want to welcome you to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and let you know that this program works, and it works good. You know, and what motivates me for change today is pain. When I get in some kind of pain, there's something going on that I need to take a look at. And that's what motivated me into this 12-step recovery process. My sponsor, the big book is somewhere. There's a big book over here, right? That's a textbook of recovery because anything that I share or have ever shared from the podium about the disease of alcoholism, the 12-step recovery process, is my belief system. It certainly doesn't have to coincide with anything that you believe. And if I've ever said anything that pissed you off, and you see me out there on the street, and you go, there's that little motherfucker that said that in that meeting that pissed me off. Well, you know, there's a step that deals with that. That's called a resentment, and that's killer for us. We cannot live and be comfortable without a resentment. Put me on that list. Put me on that list, but please don't come back because some of the people, when I did my inventory and I worked the steps in order and I got to my inventory and I had some names on that list, you know, and I had to take it from the 4th step. I worked 5, 6, and 7 the same day. I did my inventory. My sponsor had me go home and review what I had done. And there isn't a hell of a lot on character defects and shortcomings in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, about this much. I still have every character defect and shortcoming that I ever came into recovery with. Only I don't... I was confused on that step, but, you know, some of my inventory pointed out what some of my shortcomings were. And I went to my sponsor. We talked. He said, John, you're a walking character defect. You know, so... But you know, I was willing to take a look at my part in everything. I did the 4-column inventory, and I got to the 9-step, and I started receiving some freedom. This program is not about relief. Because for me, relief was every time I got loaded, I was being relieved. It's about some freedom that I have achieved through working those steps. I've uncovered some of the crap that I came here with. You know, and I believe the kingdom of God is within all of us. And what I've did my entire life is thrown garbage on top of this God. And what the 12-step recovery process is designed to do is for you to uncover, discover, and get rid of that garbage so that you can have a conscious contact with the God that's within you. And I've done that. You know, I have cleared away enough of the pain, the demoralization, and all the crap that I came in here with. I was 29 years old when I got sober. I had 29 years worth of baggage to take a look at. 29 years worth of pain, resentments, and fears to walk through. You know, and I've gotten the freedom that is guaranteed. Page 83 and 84. Is it 83? The promises are on page 83 and 84. Guaranteed. That before you're halfway through that 9-step, you will receive some real promises, you know. One of them that I live in today is I don't regret the past and I wish to shut the door on it. I went through a treatment center. I don't have a hell of a lot of time to go tell you that, but one of the slogans that they used there was, those who forget the past are condemned to repeat it. You know, so my past is my best asset today. Whenever I think I'm not getting what I deserve, if I got what I deserved, I certainly wouldn't be standing here tonight. You know, if I got what I do, whenever I think that life isn't treating me the way I look where I came from, where I have been. 14 years ago, I was in the pits. You know, and what I've gotten today is I've gotten some real integrity in my life. I walk down the street with my head high. I no longer look at my feet all the time. I no longer feel like the worthless piece of crap that came walking in here. You know, and I got some freedom. You know, through working the steps, and above all, I've got a conscious contact with a God that of my own understanding. You know, and again, I want to welcome the new people. And I didn't come here and just take a seat. You know, because you'll hear a lot of things from this podium that just keep coming back. This too shall pass. The one that's really killing newcomers on a daily basis is don't drink no matter what. Those little slogans do work, but they have to be followed up with some type of an action. Because no matter what, and this is just my belief system. If those little things work for you, if you're just coming back, and if you're turning it over, I don't know how you do those things. You got to do some action in order to. Like when my car breaks down, when I get a flat tire, I have to get off my ass, get out of the car, jack the car up, take the tire off, and change the tire. Take some real footwork. You know, because no matter what, I got loaded. My sponsor directed me into the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the most important chapter in there is, I think, the doctor's opinion. Now, if you can identify with the phenomenon of craving, once I took one chemical in my body, I wanted more. My drug of choice really was more. More of whatever you had. More of whatever you had, because what I had, I was keeping for myself. I was real selfish with my chemicals. You know, but I'm grateful today that I don't have to go back to that crap, you know, and pain is a motivator for all of us. Is that time? Is it time? All right. I guess that's it. Again, I just want to welcome the new people and get involved. Get a commitment. I got a commitment. My very first meeting, I got a commitment. I set up a meeting. I showed up every week. And it made me feel a part of. And the people that reached out their hand, the unconditional love that is so freely expressed in these rooms is phenomenal. You know, I mean, think about this one. I mean, this is the biggest organization in the world that absolutely nobody wanted to join. I didn't put myself through all the pain and turmoil and crap to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. It was not on my agenda. But I'm grateful that I got here, and I'm grateful that I've been here as long as I have. And again, new people, get involved. Get a sponsor. It doesn't have to be somebody that you like, because the whole purpose of a sponsor is to guide you through those steps. I didn't like my sponsor. He was kind of a wimpy guy. But he had an inner peace that I wanted, something I wanted. And I've gotten that today through working the steps and through being just showing up here and being willing to go to any lengths to stay clean and sober. Welcome to the new people, and my time's about up, right? All right, thank you.
Now our main speaker will share his experience, strength, and hope with us. Please join me in welcoming Steve B. from North Hollywood.
Yay! Expecting a taller speaker. thank you very much. All right. Man, I like this group already. I'm a member of it for 5 seconds and I'm being humiliated. That's good. Everybody, I'm Steve Bordner, and I am an alcoholic. And if you're new, that's what we do around here. If we like you, we make fun of you. You know, it's a public shaming. It's an alcoholic trait. I want to thank this group for letting me be of service. A couple people already tonight have said, well, thanks for driving down here from North Hollywood, Steve, and I'd have been here for a drink. Yeah. I mean, who wouldn't have driven up to Van Nuys if I said, come on up on Saturday, we'll drink. You've all been in the bus, gone. That's my rule in sobriety. If I would have drank to do it, I'll do it in sobriety. If I would, there's only been one service commitment. I was going to Fresno to talk in the middle of a hurricane about 2 years ago when all that rain went. Remember when the five got washed out? And I said, this is the only time I can ever remember in my sobriety where I would not have gone this far for a drink. I would have pulled over, got a six-pack, and passed out in the motel, is what I would have done. It would have got me to Bakersfield. And maybe I would have kept going. I don't know. I want to thank this group. That's one of the great things. If you knew about Alcoholics Anonymous, you always get second chances. I was supposed to come and talk in December, and I couldn't. And I sent my buddy Carl, and I heard that talk, and you were very nice to my friend Carl. And I've already shared with you one of the greatest gifts I've gotten in sobriety. One of the people that sobriety's put in my life. I hope that you get those kind of relationships. I'm about 42 days away from 17 years, and I've got to tell you that none of the things I value in the program today were the reason I came in. That I'm going to have friends. Who wants to be friends? If you're new, look at these people. Lameville is what this is. The PTA just got out of these seats, you know what I mean? This is Saturday night, and you're sitting here to listen to some guy talk about God or die. How lame is that? Alcoholics Anonymous is built on failure, and that's not my quote. Don't get all upset with me. That's Bill Wilson. Alcoholics Anonymous is built on failure. This group of people, I don't care. There's people in here probably own half of the beach, been in 13 movies, have a gazillion dollars, and they can't split a pint. That's how sick these people are. And you take the biggest old-timer guru, spiritual giant in your meeting, you give him half or her half a glass of whiskey, and they're doing this, you know? We're just one drink away from complete devastation, all of us. I'm one drink away. It's one of the most amazing things I think that happens to you in sobriety. When you come in and you see people go out, and you see people, but you come in and there's been somebody you've always known as sober. They had time, more time than you, a year, 2 years, sometimes a lot of time. And then one day you come into the meeting and they've gone out. And you can see that their bone structure of their face literally changes. That incomprehensible demoralization at depth. And I'm so grateful for John's pitch tonight, and he said so many things. I was going, yeah, I don't have to talk now, thank you. that thing about the stove, I do that, you know, you're saying we had all the chemicals and we put our hand on the stove and it doesn't hurt? That's true, but then I do that in sobriety. Yeah. Do not touch the stove. Boom. Oh, God, the stove is hot. God, please, it hurts. God, the pain, make it stop. God goes, take your hand off the stove. Is there another way, God? You know, there was a guy named Alan McGinnis. He's been dead about 20 years, but I feel like Alan was my sponsor. And he said, this is like quantum physics for alcoholics. He had this like brilliant, this is, now if you're new, don't get into this, because this is really deep recovery, okay? This is deep recovery for alcoholics. But this is like about as deep as it gets for us. This is Alan, let the tailgater pass. Okay? Okay? Now, I'm going to say that again because I know it's hard. For this group, let the tailgater pass. When I heard that, I went, my God, that's brilliant. Because you know what you do with the tailgater. You slow down. Or you scoot over, then you tailgate them. But my God, to let them go on their way and be out in front of you where they can't hurt you? What kind of idiot stuff is that? Which got me thinking about things. Never count the number of items in front of you in the 10-item line. I think our Al-Anon friends have the right idea there, you know. Why have they got all the Al-Anons in the front row? I'm not sure, you know? But anyway, the fact is, if you it's a loser play if you do that. Now, why are you counting? You know, no, only alcoholics are... What meetings do you go to? You know, that's what it is. But if they've got more than 10 items, you're pissed off. And if they've got less than 10 items, you're disappointed, you know? Oh, darn it. 9. I can't get self-righteous. Yeah, it's such a strange thing. And that's one of the great things about Alcoholics Anonymous. If you sit in meetings, you figure out after a while, you watch your mind work. And the only thing I think that changes is I don't take it serious anymore. I'm going to talk about it. I got married in July, and about October she came to me and she said, I don't think I can be married anymore. I mean, boy, it was it was an opportunity for growth, okay? Because I only have two choices in a situation like that. If you tell me you want me, then you say, I'm not sure I want you anymore. I only have two choices. Get your stuff out and never come back. Pack now, leave. I never want to see you again. That's choice number one. Or choice, please don't leave my house. I can't live. I need you. Get her back in, then leave her. But to do something like, I need to call my sponsor. And I hate my sponsor because I know what he's going to say. You really know you're recovered when you can write down, you need to call your sponsor, you write down what they're going to say before they say it, and that's what they say. Yeah, you know what they're going to say. Your behavior isn't geared to her behavior. You need to be a loving husband and servant no matter what she does. Is anybody else there? Anybody, is your wife home? Is anybody I got to talk? Anybody got a resentment there? I want to say it's all right to burn down the house and kill everything she loves. That's what I want to do. It's all right to go tie yourself to the railroad track and see if she comes rescues you. That's what the kind of stuff I want to do. Be spiritual and understanding. And it was wild, but I'm sitting in a meeting, right? I'm gutted. I'm sitting there gutted. And this is where you realize that after a while, I make opera out of anything. I'm sitting in a meeting going, it's over. I'll never love again. I'll never love... Carol, you know, I never went out with Carol. And I'm going, you're nuts, man. You're absolutely nuts. It's one of the great things about, and to talk about self-centered, I got to tell you, I have come to realize I need this program today more than I ever needed. I am so filled with self-doubt and self-doubt and not self-loathing anymore. I got to tell you, the self-loathing has been pretty well healed, but insecurities, and this is not just little character, this is right through to my core. And I've kind of given up on it ever being healed. I don't think it's ever going to be totally go away. Now, I also know it's totally an illusion. And the reason I know this is because I look at your life, and I can always tell you where you don't see how wonderful you are. I can sit with you. I can sit with the men I sponsor. I can sit with the people that are my friends in this program and go, man, you're missing the whole boat over here, and I can't see it in myself. I need you to do that. And you've done that. One of the great things that happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous, I came in here hating my guts. And I don't base that on anything other than my behavior towards myself. If you behave towards me the way I behave towards me, you must hate me. And so the only thing I can assume is for some reason, some way, somehow, that's not important tonight, I hated my guts. And so I came in here and you guys didn't care diddly squat who I was or what I was. I mean, and it's great when you're a newcomer. I mean, it's great. You don't have to do anything, and they affirm you. Most of them. There's a couple of people. Boy. Those are the ones you want to be your friend. But most of the people in AA, no matter what you do, you get up on the podium and fart. They go, he farted in sobriety. Isn't that great? He's getting better. You get up the podium and go, blah, 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 blah. With a good share. You know, keep coming back. It's good to see you. And what happened was you guys started to love me. And so I could love myself for about 5 seconds in that chair. And then I could love myself through the meeting. Then I could love myself till I got to the car. Then I could love myself for about 30 seconds when I got home. And gradually that ability to love myself got bigger and bigger and bigger. But what I've realized is that selfishness and self-centered, those four character defects that the book says I have, which is so simple. Now, I live in a very complicated world. It seems very complicated, at least when I read the paper. And what I love about this book is it's so simple. Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. Period. End of story. Which one of those am I doing? Those are so simple. Thank you. And I'm self-centered not because I think a lot of myself, but because I think so little of myself. See, for me, spiritual maturity is simply coming into this room and knowing I'm no better and no worse than anybody here. To simply be a worker among worker, a friend among friends, the hardest thing probably in AA to be, a peer. Just to be one of you. Not to try to crawl up on top of the heap and be the most popular one, or get down under the bottom and be the scapegoat, but just to be right in the middle. It's a hard thing. And what I was going to say is, sitting in meetings, you realize how selfish and self-centered you can be. I realized how self-centered I was, and I must have been, I start recognizing this is, I must be insecure, something's scaring me, it's fear, self-centered fear. When this book, for me, talks about fear, it's not talking about walking down a street and having got 12 guys with machetes standing there, or your kid having cancer. Not that kind of fear. It's the kind of fear that goes, what will become of me? Self-centered fear. And the great thing about finding a God of my understanding is I no longer have to worry about that most of the time. What will become of me? God will take care of me. It may not be any way the way I think it should be. I used to kid for a long time that I was concerned about turning my will and my life over to the care of God, because if I did, he was going to make me a plumber in Green Bay, Wisconsin in the middle of winter. I stopped doing that because a couple guys said, hey man, my goal in life is to be a plumber. And I didn't mean in Green Bay. Cool, man. That's great. The other fear I had is he's going to have me work at Hot Dog on a Stick for the rest of my life. Now, if you don't know, that the guys don't work at Hot Dog on a Stick. It's only girls that wear uniform, obviously invented by a man that hates women. I mean, really, you know, have you ever seen an uglier uniform? Starvation, Hot Dog on a Stick. I don't know. Okay. But I'm gonna be there, right? 17 years of sobriety, I'm going to be there. You're going to be getting out of the meeting, and I'm going to corn dog. Now, obviously, the problem here is this loving concept, this loving God concept, escaped me a little bit. But I was sitting in a meeting one day, and I started fantasizing. Now, I'll just show you how sick I am, newcomers. Okay, I just want to let you know, you can be 17 years sober and stay sick. This happened about, like, 11 years of sobriety. I start fantasizing that terrorists break into the meeting, and they're going to kill everybody, except me, because I'm so special. I get to live, and I get to pick any 10 people I want to live on the island with me. Now, if you're in this meeting, I already know you're going, I wonder if he picks me. Let me just clear it up. Men, you're all dead. All the guys are dead, all right? And don't worry about it, because the rest of us are dead, because those 10 people, I am not picking for their survival skills, all right? We're all going to starve to death on that island in 5 minutes. But, you know, the thing that shows me is it's just how self-centered I am. How addicted to being special I am. I want to be special. You know, the great thing about the grace of God is it says I never can be truly special because of who I am. I'm special because of who He is. That I believe in a God, that there's nothing I can ever do that's going to make him love me anymore. Nothing I can ever do that's going to make him love me any less. He loves me because of who he is, not who I am. And the great thing about that, it takes out all the performance. I can't perform for him anymore. And this book talks about the alcoholic being the actor, and I'm the actor, and I'm not the mean actor. I'm the kind actor. I'm the nice actor. I'm the one who manipulates you with kindness to get what I want. And when you don't give me what I want, I'm kinder and kinder and kinder until one day I go, after all I've done for you, after all I've done for you. And you didn't know there was a price tag. You didn't know anything was that. You just thought I was given. It's like, after all I've done for you. I'm the guy that while she was on the Harley with Guido, I was sitting with her mother and the flowers, you know? That's the guy I was. The nice guy. But all it was a manipulation, because I wasn't nice to make sure everybody got their turn on the sliding board. I was nice because I thought that's the way I would get what I wanted. And the great thing about a loving God and grace of God is there's nothing I can ever do to impress him. And, you know, it's me. I always want to be under his big hairy armpit, you know. But, you know, St. Peter here and Steve Bordner there. Yeah, that's my special guy right there. King David, Steve Bordner. Yep, there they are, right there. Now, the thing that really upsets me about the grace of God is that God loves you as much as me. Now, that irritates me a little bit. I mean, I'm happy he loves you. I just want him to love me that much more. And he won't. No matter what I do, you know? No matter, he won't even give me negative attention. Which is what I was apt to get. I'm an alcoholic. I can get negative attention. I was talking to my wife, who's a member of another 12-step fellowship where all the good kids go. I always tease her that over there when they relapse, it's not because they didn't do the steps, it's because they ate them. But now, normally I don't say this on a night I want sex. No, I don't. But the fact of the matter is, this is the difference between us. It's like, now, I know the people in this room figured this out. If somebody asks you to do something you don't want to do and you have to do it, what do you do to get out of it? You do it, but you do the crappiest job you can possibly do, right? You do the worst job you can do, and what happens? They never ask you to do it again. They ask you to go somewhere you don't want to go. You're just a real rotten, stinking, horrible person. We're not taking him anymore. Ask him to cut the lawn. You cut a pattern. We're not asking him to cut the lawn anymore. My wife can literally not do a bad job. She has to do a good job. I'm like the failed perfectionist, and she's like the practicing perfectionist. She really does. And I go, and see, and the problem with a failed perfectionist, I'll tell you where it really screws you up. It's like, I look at something, I go, I can't do that perfect. I'm not going to do it at all. I'm not going to do it at all. Now, a normal person will go, I can't do that perfect, but you know, I might be able to do 80%. And 80% is better than zero. 70% is better than zero. 50% is better than zero, but not in my head. My head, it's 100% or nothing. I'm not going to bowl unless I can look good and bowl great. I'm not playing volleyball unless I can look good and play volleyball great. And the fact of the matter is what you people have taught me is I'm going to be mediocre at most everything I do in my life. You know what I mean? I'm going to be good at like two or three things, and the rest of it I'm going to be mediocre at, and I can choose to sit on the sidelines and never do anything, or I can just go ahead and be the worst possible thing that an alcoholic can be. Average. And the thing about average, I think, is so many of us are average because that's what it is. Average. That's why it got that way. Because there's a lot of people there. Average people. In fact, most people are average at most things. But not in my head. It's not okay. And again, it goes back to this one thing. Low self-esteem. I don't have enough self-esteem to be average. I don't have enough self-esteem to be wrong. You know, people who can be wrong think a lot of I was wrong. Wrong. And then you come into this dumb program, and on the 10th step, it's written right there on the wall. And when wrong, promptly admitted it. An amazing thing for alcoholics to do. Not only to acknowledge that they're wrong, but to admit it when they are. I don't know about you, I drank myself out of marriages. This is the thing I've learned about being married. You can be right or you can be happy. We're back to quantum sobriety, okay? Especially in marriage, in a lot of things, you can be right in your inner group or you can be happy. You can be right in your home group or you can be happy, you know, or you can be right or you can be happy. Now, the crazy thing is, sometimes I'd rather be right than happy. Sometimes I'd rather be out on the couch alone being right than in the bed with the love bunny getting all the benefits of being a love bunny. Because she's so mutated, she thinks the Baltimore Colts were the greatest team of the 60s when everybody knows it was the Minnesota Vikings. I'll tell you another thing I've learned in sobriety. If you don't start an argument with your wife going, look, bitch. It goes a lot better. You know? I mean, come on, how how many of you knew that when you came in here? I mean, but the simple things. I still remember when I was in Palm Springs one year, and a judge said it never dawned on him that the only way to stop drinking was to stop drinking. You know? I when I was trying to get sober, I went to a hypnotist, and he said, you need to set a date. So I set a date, and I went out and bought 2 bottles of champagne to celebrate stopping drinking. Right? What else does an alcoholic gets ready to go into treatment? What do? They go out and get plastered. It's an amazing thing. I never underestimate how simple this complex brain needs to be. It's an amazing deal, and I've got to tell you that it probably took me 14 years before I could separate feelings from actions. You know, this book, when it talks about anger, Bill Wilson always seems to equate anger and rage, acting out the anger. He's not talking about the nice, clean feeling we get when we get ticked. He's talking about doing something about it. And I don't know about you, but I'm an alcoholic. I never equate feelings without an action. If I love you, I have to sleep with you, right? If I hate you, I have to hit you. I mean, these things all make perfect sense to me. Just to have the feeling and not do anything with it seems like a terrible waste to me. What's the purpose, you know, just to have the experience? And it was about 14 years where I lost the job, I lost the girl, I lost my health, all in 6 months, and I was really ticked off, and I could simply sit in meetings, have the feelings, and not have to go destroy. See, the only thing I could do with my anger when I got here was destroy. Somebody hurt me, and I was going to make you feel what I felt, which was pain. And you people have given me one of the greatest gifts I think you can give an alcoholic, or maybe any human being, to hurt and create. You've given me a place where I can bring my hurt and my anger and my pain, and I can put it in these meetings, and John said it, and somebody's going to get helped. Somebody's going to, when I lost that girl and that job and that health, you know, I was sitting in a morning meeting at 14 years of sobriety crying, and I had one guy with big heroin arms around me over here. Another alcoholic arms, and the guys were just hanging on to me. And nobody was saying, Steve, you know, if you worked the 4-step better, you wouldn't be feeling this way. Nobody was saying, Steve, at 14 years of sobriety, crying in a meeting? Nobody said any of that stuff. They just cried when I cried, and they laughed when I laughed. And I was healed. And then I know that those guys went away, went going, you know what? It's okay at 14 years of sobriety to hurt. Because see, as a friend of mine says, every one of us think in this book somewhere, there's a chapter, Where I Should Be By Now. And the problem with that is, we're never there. We're never, ever, I am never, ever where I think I'm supposed to be, and I guess I'm always exactly where God needs me and wants me to be. And one of the things I've learned to have to give up in sobriety a good deal of the time is my own opinion of how my life is going. Yeah. How things are going. It's an amazing trip. I'm kind of all over the map here. I did hear a cute joke. I don't usually tell jokes in my pitch. I think it's because probably in my sophomore year, the civics teacher said, when you start a speech, tell talk. You know, tell jokes. And I said, I'm not doing that. Because defiance is the outstanding characteristic of many alcoholics, right? And I love the way Bill Wilson put that, many alcoholics. Because if Bill Wilson had said, defiance is the outstanding characteristics of all alcoholics, I would defy him by not being defiant. See? So he says many, and he lets me deal myself in. But there was this story about Neil Armstrong when he walked on the moon. Apparently, when he walked on the moon, he said, had this throwaway line, good luck, Mr. Gorski. And nobody knew what he meant. Nobody knew what he meant. And for years, he wouldn't talk about it. And so finally, apparently Mr. Gorski died. So Neil Armstrong said, well, the thing was, Mr. Gorski lived next door to me when I was a kid. And one day, my brother and I were throwing a ball around, and the ball went over the fence, and I had to go in the Gorski's yard. And I went to the Gorski's yard, and it was by the window, and I reached and got the ball. And as I did, I heard Mrs. Gorski yelling at Mr. Gorski, oral sex? You want oral sex? You'll get oral sex when the kid next door walks on the moon. Good luck, Mr. Gorski. Now, the reason I tell that joke is I'm sure all of us had neighbors who went, oral sex, you want oral sex? You'll get oral sex when the drunk next door gets sober. We're at a meeting. Yeah. I mean, I don't know about you. I am a drunk of the hopeless variety. I want to talk to the newcomers, and then I just want to talk about where things are. John talked about what it was like so well that I get to talk about what my life is like going right now, because it's so important. I got to tell you that, you know, you go through your sobriety, and in the beginning it's really exciting, and after a while, I think the reason you talk about early sobriety and what it was like is because later sobriety seems sort of dull compared. It's actually serenity. But it takes a while to recognize serenity from boredom. Because when you live up here, you know, when you're get Learjets and hookers and color TVs and cocaine and people who don't speak any language, you know, and Martians and all that stuff, you know, going to work and going to the dentist and paying your income tax and people loving you, that kind of sounds strange. It takes a while to get used to. I mean, you guys remember, like, when it was new, you know, those newcomer things? Yeah, you know, oh, yeah, man, like, I got up, my sponsor told me that I had a clean house and find God. And I don't know about God, so I got up one morning and I cleaned the house, and I cleaned the house. And then I found a quarter, and it said, "In God we trust." And I went, "Oh, God, wow, yeah." And I said, "In God we trust." And I realized God was dog spelled backwards. Right, wow. And then I went and talked to the dog, and I looked at the dog, and the dog looked at me, and the dog that I looked at, and it was a spiritual experience, man. So then I went, "Oh, I'm late." I went to work, and I got to work, and my boss was really upset, so I said, "Easy does it, man, you know, like easy does it, dude, but do it." And he says, "What?" He says, "Yeah, you know, like, there's no big deals, you know, easy does it." He says, "You know, you're right, there are no big deals, you're not the big deal, so you're fired." I went, "Fired? Whoa, man, how?" So I went to a meeting, because I wanted to drink, but I went to a meeting, you know, I went to a meeting, and I shared, and all the old-timers, they kind of seemed, did not to understand what I was saying, but there was this newcomer chick, man, she loved what I was saying, and so she came up to me after the meeting, and she said, "I really like what you say," and I said, "Thank you very much, I'm a spiritual guy." And she said, "Like, would you sponsor me?" And I said, "Well, you know, I got 30 solid days, I guess I could sponsor you." So we went home to my house and we read the big book, you know, it was great, read the big book, and I didn't even have to sleep with her. I mean, I did sleep with her, but I didn't have to, you know what I mean? I mean, that's like newcomerville, isn't it, you know? You get about 10, 12 years, yeah, well, you know, how are things going? Well, you know, one kid, they found the cure for cancer, and the other guy, they've taken care of famine in Biafra this year. And the wife, yeah, well, she arrested the Unabomber this week. Yeah, that's true. And me, I'm still trying to figure out what to do with the lottery money we won, you know. But there are no big deals in my life, man. I mean, sort of like later sobriety. Just ebbs and it flows. It comes and it goes. But if you're new, I hope you're hopeless tonight. If you're new, I got to tell you, I've got almost 17 years of sobriety, and I believe if I can do it, anybody can do it. I didn't rent planes. I didn't wake up. I didn't go to Folsom, and I didn't go to Tahiti. All I did was sit in my house and drink. I am the everyman of drunks. I am one of those drunks who just by the millions died and never made a dent on anybody. And in my lifestyle, I had to give up, I was sitting in my underwear, you know, crying hysterically because they just missed the word bubblegum on the $10,000 pyramid, and laughing hysterically because Jillian was leaving Seneca one more time in Ryan's Hope. And when I want a little aerobic exercise, I'd go to the front window and look out, and I'd go to the back window out, and I'd sit down and drink. When somebody told me that I had to either give up that lifestyle or go live by spiritual principles, I wanted to think about it. I was a hopeless drunk. I am a hopeless drunk. I just don't experience the alcoholism anymore. I'm as alcoholic as I was almost 17 years ago. I know tonight if I go out and take a drink, it will all go away like that. And the other thing I can tell you, if you're new, if you sit around here for 17 years, you watch it happen. Because I know, there's a story in this book that really revolutionized my program this year. It's on 309, I believe. And the woman said that she'd gotten a hold of the book, she read it, it said that she would be able to recover if she did a few simple things. John talked about it, read the book, get a sponsor, come to meetings, do the steps, do a little bit of service work around here, that's it. The second edition of the second preface to the big book, it says that 50% got sober right away, 25% got sober after a while, and of the other 25%, some of them got better. Of those who really tried, and I just told you what I think really trying is, getting a sponsor, doing the steps, and I believe those statistics work. I believe that Alcoholics Anonymous is 100% successful of the people who do it. And every once in a while, there's a person around here that really works the steps and really does service, and they still drink, and that's just here to keep me humble and not judge. Ain't my job to judge anybody's program. And so if you knew what I know is, and she says, and that she only had to be able to do two things, do the few simple steps and be willing to have the desire to drink removed. And that sentence has echoed through my head from the willing to have the desire to drink removed. There's people in this room, there were people in this room in January. They came in because they'd missed Christmas. They'd missed Christmas. They'd spent all the, no, they weren't there with the kids. And they came in this room, they didn't have the car, they're getting fired, and they were willing to have the desire to drink removed as anybody that's got the longest time in that room, that 24-hour period. And they stayed sober. And I'll tell you what, if you stay sober for a while, what you lost, you'll get back. It may not be the same wife, it may be a new one. It may not be the same car, it may be a new one. It may not be the same job, a new, but generally life gets better and we get successful. The hardest thing to handle in sobriety, success. And then one day what happened is they found out they weren't here to have the desire to drink removed. They were here to get the stuff back. And once they got the stuff back, they didn't need to be here anymore. And I know that the reason I'm here today and somebody else that came in May 25th, 1979 isn't, is because on one day they chose not to surrender whatever it is they had to surrender that day in order to stay sober. And I have no idea what I'm going to have to surrender tomorrow. I know I can look back on almost 17 years of sobriety and tell you I've had to surrender a lot of things, a lot of people, places, and ideas, and some of them good. And I had to surrender those things because it was between surrendering those things or drinking. Period, end of story. You know, and I have to keep at this work, which I want to talk about. Newcomers, I believe you don't have any choice. I believe you're going to work a program of recovery or a program of alcoholism. I don't know what kind of program you work, but I worked a 12-step program when I was out there. It went something like this. One, I declared I was in complete control of my drinking and my life was fine and dandy. Thank you very much. Two, I always knew there was no power greater than myself, but all of you needed to be restored to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of alcohol because it was the only thing that understood me. Four, made a paranoid and immoral inventory of anybody but me. Five, admit nothing to nobody ever. Six, became entirely willing to have God punish you for all your defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to go bug somebody else. Eight, made a list of all persons who would harm me and became willing to take revenge upon them all. Nine, took direct revenge whenever possible, especially when to do so would injure them and others. 10, continue to take your inventory, and when you were wrong, promptly told you so. 11, sought through alcohol and medication to improve my unconscious contact with myself, praying only for what I wanted when I wanted it and the power to get it. And 12, having achieved spiritual death as a result of these steps, I tried to carry this message to other alcoholics and take just as many of them with me as I could. Now, there's only one tradition. Do whatever you got to do to get through the night. See? Two 12-step programs side by side, and God's got me in a double bind. I'm going to work one, or I'm going to work the other, but what I'm not going to do is I'm not going to work a program. My only choice today, by the grace of God, is I can work a program of recovery rather than a program of alcoholism. And this program has taken me places I never thought I wanted to go, and then when I get there, I always find out that they're where I want to be. You know, I got married in July, and I have used the principles of this program in recovery. I know how to play well with others today. And if I could change the name of Alcoholics Anonymous, it would be to Does Not Know How to Play Well with Others Anonymous. If you want to do a really interesting inventory, go look at your fourth grade report card. Okay? We're the people who always, it says in the 12 and 12, that defective relationships with other people are the primary cause of our woes, including my alcoholism. And so once I got in here and got sober, then I had to learn how to get along with you. And I was a member of the same home group for 14 years. You can't just go on and be with the same toxic alcoholics for 14 years and not learn how to get along with them. And I just encourage you, if you've got a resentment, don't quit this group and go to another one, because whoever you resent is going to be at the next group. They'll have a different little earth suit on, but it'll be the same person. Because I got the news for you. God has a lesson for you to learn, and you ain't going to get out of it. You can learn it here, or you can learn it there. You can learn it in this relationship, or you can learn it in the next one. But you're going to learn it. Until you learn it, he ain't going to let you go. And so I worked hard at this relationship. She worked hard. And like I said, in October, she came to me, and being as honest as she could, said, I just don't know. On this side of the marriage, I don't know if I could do it. I was devastated, absolutely devastated. And what I had stopped doing was stop talking about it. What I realized was I was embarrassed about it. What I realized was I didn't think that at 14 years I should be doing this anymore. I thought I should be farther along and better than that. And I hurt so much, I finally did the one thing I had to do. I started talking about it. And some people asked me to come talk at a meeting, and it was a Friday night meeting, and it was a kickoff meeting. And I had to get up and say, look, I don't even feel like I'm qualified to talk. And I know the only reason I'm qualified to talk is you asked me. It's not who I am. But this is what's going on with my life. And again, the miracle happened. You healed me. You know, I talked at some meetings during that period of time where I didn't even know there was one Sunday meeting. I didn't even know for the first time if I could get up and talk. And I got through that meeting and talked. And when I got healed was every person hugged me that left that meeting. And I was healed for another 24 hours. I was able to go home and be of service and not destroy that relationship while God was doing His work. Because what I had forgotten was it wasn't my marriage, it was God's. And what as a friend had pointed out to me is I'd forgotten this book says, we thought we could wrest satisfaction and happiness from life if only we managed well. See, I came in here with the idea that if I do crappy things, good things should happen. I know I slept with your sister, I spent all your money, I killed a chihuahua. How can you leave me? And what I come to realize was leaving me was the only sane thing to do. But then this alcoholic brain turned it around and said, well, that means if I do everything right, good things should happen. And what the lesson is this year is that, no, you can do everything as right as you can, and it'll turn out just as wrong as if you did everything wrong. And are you going to do it the right way, simply because that's the right way to do it? Is the character building simply to get what I want from you, or is the character building to build character regardless of the results? And I'll tell you what happened. This happens doing this thing right here. I get to go a lot of places and talk to a lot of people. I am so honored. You have no idea how insecure and how worthless I feel. And for somebody, and I talk for Mike, to get asked back to talk to somebody, it constantly amazes me. It humbles me. It absolutely humbles me. And I realize that speaking in AA is like one of the lamest jobs you can do. I mean, it's like Tony Curtis in Spartacus. It really is. You know, it's not very important. You know, you ever know Spartacus? They're like all buff guys, you know, like gladiator killer guys, and they go to Tony Curtis, what do you do? And he goes, I'm a singer of songs. Oh, great, great. When the Romans are giving us the lead enema, we'll really need you to hit those high notes. We really are looking for you, buddy. No, but I what I realized is, you know, the most important thing that's going to happen tonight, and hopefully I say something that can help somebody, but when this meeting is getting torn down, there's going to be some guy that wants to go home and be with the love bunny, and some other guy's going to look at him and go, could I talk to you? Could I talk to you? And you know that look, 3 hours at Denny's. And when everything in this guy wants to go, man, I gotta, but yeah. Yeah. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. That is Alcoholics Anonymous. And everything we do, the food, the convention, everything we do is geared for that and that only. And this actually happened. Kind of Mike's meeting was, I'll finish with this story. Mike's meeting was kind of, I'll just show you again how even the good things in my life can now become destructive. I can make anything destructive. And what I found is the good things can even be more destructive sometimes than the bad things. I had shared at Mike's meeting over at the marina when he was the speaker person there, and a guy called me up and said, I want you to speak at my meeting, because I was over at Mike's meeting, and the tape guy said that there's some guy sold more tapes than me, and I wanted to see who it was. Now, immediately, I had no idea anybody ever counts tapes or anything else, right? But immediately, my head goes, goddamn right, I sold more tapes, right, sure. I don't even know what he's talking about, right? I have no idea what he's talking about, but I'm sure I did. And then it dawned on me that of course, and the tape guys, let me tell you what, the people, the tape women are my favorite people. Whenever I go someplace, I meet them, because they have them. If you ever sit down and talk about the speakers and the stories, Bernie, I mean, they're just chock full of AA history, and I really love AA history. But what I realized was, like, they kept numbers on the tapes, which makes sense. They got an inventory. That meant they could tell who sold most. Now, my head goes, let's find out where we stand. See, now, all this is about is talking. If I help one person here, if there's one person here tonight, that's all this is about. But this low self-esteem, what does it want to do? It wants to be like, and it's a loser play, right? It's a loser play, because if I sold more tapes than God, Now I'm basing how I feel on how you feel about me, and I'm addicted to you. I'm addicted to what, and I can become a chameleon. I can figure out what you want me to be and be it. On a date, I just listened to her for the first half of what she wanted to be, and the second half, that's what I was. Right? And if I'm like last or in the middle, average, I'm a loser. And I literally had to call up my sponsor and said, I make a pact with you. I will never, ever, ever, one thing I never do is ask how big a meeting is, and I will never, ever go up to anybody that tapes and ask how I did before I call you. Because I know the trap. And I know when I'm feeling sad and insecure about myself, that little guy called, you know, said, let's have a moosey. Let's have a moosey, you know? And I tell him, no, that's like going to a house of prostitution to listen to the piano player. We're not doing that. And then he says, well, let's ask the tape guy. And what I realized is speaking, sponsoring. If I can't sponsor 37 guys, you know, I've come to realize that if they're new, I can do three new guys at once. The old guys, they come and they go and they call me every once in a while, but I can only handle three. It doesn't matter how many people you can sponsor. That's how good I am. That's all I can do. Time. I can start standing on my time. I've got 17 years, and it doesn't mean anything if I'm not of service in the meeting today. Sponsorship, you know, what I realized about sponsorship, I did a little workshop at my home group about sponsorship, and I went to, as Bill sees it, sponsorship didn't even have its own heading. It was under 12-step work. We've institutionalized sponsorship. We've institutionalized time. All of these things get to be the sobriety medals I can wear on my chest rather than humble tools that I can use to understand the will of God. And I've come to Alcoholics Anonymous, all I ever want to be here is one of you. I never, ever want to get to be a special member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it would kill me. I don't think I can handle it. And so I fight to stay just one among many. And I got to tell you, I'm such an egomaniac, I'm so insecure that that's not even, without you people, without a home group, without a sponsor, without people who love me just because of who I am, I couldn't do it. It's an amazing journey, and I hope you stay on it. I know that there are other lessons in life for me. This year has just, I would not give up one bit of the pain I've had this year, because what has happened for me this year is I have lost so much more of that self-centered fear. What's going to become of me? And the story I close with, because it helps, and I'm going to keep trying to cut it out, but people said, don't cut it out, it helps, is that the alcoholic's going home one day, and on the road home, he meets God. And the alcoholic's torn up and sick and hung out, and God's got something in his hands, and the alcoholic goes, what's that? And God goes, it's sobriety. And the alcoholic, being manipulative, goes, well, how much does it cost? And God, being manipulative, goes, well, how much you got? And the alcoholic goes, well, I got about $50. And God says, okay, for you, sobriety costs $50. And the alcoholic says, well, if I give you $50, I won't have any money to buy gas for my car. And God goes, oh, you have a car. Oh, a car. No, it's for you, sobriety will cost you your car. He says, well, if I give you my car, how am I going to get to my job? He says, oh, you have a job. You're employed. Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, for you, sobriety costs you your job. He says, well, if I give you my job, how will I pay for my house? A home. You have a home. Oh, no. I thought you were in the cardboard box down by the railroad tracks. No, a home. No, for you, sobriety costs you your home. He says, well, if I give you my home, what about my wife and my kids? A family. You have a family. No, for you, sobriety cost to your family. The alcoholic goes, then what good is my life? And God goes, that's right. Sobriety cost you your life. And the drunk, because he's just hurt enough and got nowhere to go, gives God his money and his car, his job, his home, his wife, his kids, his life. And God gives the drunk sobriety. And then he looks him deep in the eye and goes, all right, I'm going to give you your money back, but it's not your money anymore, it's my money. But you get to spend it for me. I'm going to give you your car back, it's not your car anymore, it's my car. I may give you a Mercedes-Benz, but I want some alcoholics in that car because it's my car. I want some people who can throw up in that car, you know. You scotch guard that puppy, but if you got a car that's too good to throw up in, you got a car that's too good for a sober alcoholic. It's my car. But you get to drive it for me. I'm going to give you your job back. It's not your job anymore. It's my job, but you get to work it for me. I'm going to give you your house back. It's not your house anymore. It's my house. You get to live in it for me. I'm going to give your wife and your kids back to you. But you know, based on your behavior, they have a right never to talk to you again. You've lost every right to ever talk to these people again, and I'm going to give them back to you because they're not your family anymore. They're my family. You get to take care of them for me. I'm going to give you your life back, and it's never your life ever again. It's my life. And you get to live it for me. That's the deal, I believe, that God cuts with all of us in the third step. And by the grace of God, the fellowship of the Alcoholics Anonymous, rooms like this, people like you, all over this country, I am a man most richly blessed, and I hope that you all keep coming back. Thank you very much.